stretch out, but your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin.
Okay, welcome back to the Inside Running Podcast, Kate Smythe.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'm Sophie Ryan, as many of you might be getting to know my voice, I'm sorry. I'm back here with my lovely friend Kate. And today we're doing a bit of a deep dive into female hormones. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a discussion around female hormones, the menstrual cycle, women's periods, and how this affects training, racing, overall health and well-being. Mm-hmm. Kate is a naturopath, and we've heard from Kate a few times now, and it's wonderful to have a resource like you that we can tap into and learn so much from. And I think, as Kate and I have just been discussing, the objective here is to just provide a little bit of clarity and understanding around this very, very complex topic that is female hormones, and assist listeners in, I guess, better understanding all the components, or as many components as we can pump out in a short space of time, but also to help support the men in women's lives, so coaches, training partners, to help them better understand this very complex topic. But I think if we're all if we're all equipped with a bit more knowledge around female hormones and the menstrual cycle, we can better understand how this affects our day-to-day lives, our training, and our overall health and well-being.
Yeah, great.
So let's get into it, Kate. We've got a bit to get through. Would you mind starting with just a bit of a recap on the main female hormones and what actually happens in a cycle?
Yeah, sure. So essentially, hormones are messages in the body that send messages throughout our whole body, initially starting from the brain and then going out to the various organs. And with female hormones, all of our hormones, the backbone of our hormones, originated from cholesterol. Mm-hmm. So we've got this unfortunate bad label around cholesterol, but we actually need cholesterol to produce our own hormones. And from cholesterol, a form of progesterone is formed that then goes off to make our other hormones, such as estrogen. Mm-hmm. Now, it gets quite complex because there is quite a cascade of hormones that occurs during a women's cycle. And there's a few things that can go wrong during the cycle, which we'll talk about as well, and the signs that you can look out for that on a day-to-day basis. But we also have to be mindful that women need some testosterone as well. We all do have some, but it's in smaller amounts. And, all of our hormones play a very valuable role in our overall health. They're not just sex hormones. They do so much more. Estrogen, for example, estrogen is absolutely essential for our bone health, which a lot of athletes would know about, but it's also essential to things like cardiovascular health. It's anti-inflammatory to our brain. It helps with tissue. It helps mobilize white blood cells to fight off infection. Like, there's so many things that we kind of don't really give it credit for. It's supports our vessels and our skin, hence why when estrogen goes low, women can get very dry on our skin. It helps with all of our secretions through our body, our lubrications in all areas. And it also helps with the excretion of excess, and I say excess, cholesterol through bile as well, so we don't have atherosclerotic buildup. It's very protective against that side of things as well. So there's just so many things that estrogen does that we kind of don't really think about on a day-to-day basis. And progesterone's fascinating because estrogen is actually made from progesterone, believe it or not. And when and we typically know that progesterone is the one that thickens the lining of the uterus and helps with implantation if a woman ovulates, in terms of fertility, pregnancy. Yeah. But the fascinating thing I find, especially with athletes, is if they're in heavy training, cortisol can be made from progesterone. So cortisol can be made from the adrenal gland, but when a woman is very stressed, either physically with high training loads or mentally with emotional stress, whatever that can be, progesterone can be diverted into making cortisol.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? The body is really, really clever, because cortisol is essential. You think of fight or flight mechanism, it is so much more important for the body to have cortisol in terms of daily function.
Like a coping strategy.
Coping strategy rather than reproduction. So in times of stress, we are just like all mammals, we will shut down our reproductive. Yeah. So, but in terms of our cycle, let's go back to the pattern. And I'll talk about what's typically anormal.
Yep.
Because I think a lot of women struggle to know, oh, is what I'm going through normal or abnormal?
Absolutely.
So during a monthly cycle, we will start, day one is day of, first day of bleeding, a proper bleed. And the average cycle is 28 days. However, a normal cycle is anywhere from almost 21, 22, which sounds very light, but it can be that short, up to 35. Yeah. And that is normal. It's your normal that matters, yeah. Not against the 28.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the regularity of it is what really matters. And typically a menstrual bleed, which isn't just blood, it's a lot of other secretions that a woman secretes as well. That will be anywhere from 3 to 5 days. And although it may look like for some women they're losing a lot of blood, typically the average period is around 50 mils that we lose over the entire period. But it can be, normal can be anywhere from sort of 25 to 30 to 80 mil.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So if you equate that back to tampons or pads, for example, generally a tampon will hold around 5 mils.
Okay.
So for the whole period, women will typically change 10 times. And of course that will be different if you're changing more regularly and it's only half filling.
Of course.
So you just got to keep that into consideration. But that's sort of a normal period, really. Now in terms of the dance that happens between our hormones, our day one of the cycle, as I mentioned, starts with the bleed. And that is the start of what we call the follicular phase. Yep. It's called follicular because it is our follicle starting to mature and form again. And if we think of our period, the bleeding time, as the time a little bit like winter, we're reclusing a little bit, we're gathering our energy for the new season to come. That's such an important time to nurture, to really look after ourselves and be gentle and nurture, just like we do in winter. We naturally want to hibernate a bit more. We naturally
warm.
Stay, you know, just
be cozy.
Be cozy, yeah, and be a bit more gentle. Also with our exercise.
Yeah.
So a lot of women do very well when they're bleeding with still maintaining exercise, but it's gentle. It's not as vigorous. They may do more cross training. They may do more stretching, yoga, meditation, more gentling, nurturing
activity.
Exercise activity. Yeah. And the follicular phase, without getting too technical, you've got the early stage when we're still bleeding and then the later stage when we've stopped bleeding, but we haven't ovulated yet.
Yeah.
Now that phase of a cycle, if you look at a 28-day cycle, that first phase is typically 14, but it can change. That's the part of our cycle that changes. The second part after ovulation is always 14 days. It never changes.
Right.
So when women have longer cycles, you know, 30 plus, it's the first part of their cycle that is changing.
Interesting.
Because the hormones that trigger ovulation may be the issue and the build up to ovulation.
Right.
for example, follicle stimulating hormone may be slightly underactive, so the body can't quite get to the point where luteinizing hormone spikes right before we ovulate, and typically one oocyte, one egg is released.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for some women that doesn't quite happen.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And what we typically find, and I say typically because every woman is a little different, but towards the end of that follicular phase where it's springtime, our eggs are getting ready, follicle stimulating hormone that I mentioned is like the whip on our follicles that says, come on guys, get cracking. Yeah. I want a really good one here. And there'll be several that start to grow, but only one that fully matures and gets released. Typically, I know some women can double ovulate. Yeah. Let's not get technical. Let's talk about the
averages.
Normal. But typically just before we ovulate, we have what we call this surge period, and it's surge in energy, it's surge in vitality, it's surging in let's get shit done kind of mode.
Yep.
It's the time when we want to socialize the most.
Yep.
It's the times we're most attracted to men, and they're attracted to us.
Mm.
And there's this old theory that you can notice when a woman is about to ovulate because her hips will swing slightly more.
Wow.
And you can cut, when I'm walking around the streets, I can pick it now. I go, wow, look at that. And it's just a physiological thing that we have. Not all women will, you know, it's not like they're massively swinging, but you can kind of tell, you go, wow, that's really prominent in that female.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating because it's a way of attracting males to,
saying, you're going to ovulate.
Yeah, in a very instinctive way.
Yeah, well.
We don't know we're doing it, thank God.
Yeah.
But during this phase, from an athletic perspective, as we're going into ovulation, it's when we're strongest in that second half of our follicular phase. Like, we're really strong. We get much better muscle gains during that period. We can recover better. We can access our glycogen, our carbohydrates better. So all the things that make us athletic and strong women are optimized during that first 14 days, believe it or not. So it's absolutely okay to race on your period.
Yeah.
It's great because you're actually engaging muscle, you recover more, you can actually handle more. If you're doing strength training, you'll be able to load more during that time.
So if you can manage those symptoms associated with bleeding, it's great to be running. Great to be racing.
Yeah.
When you've got your period.
Yeah.
Okay.
What I find most women, just picking up on a technical nuance there. So if you mention when they're bleeding, I find most women have symptoms the day or two before, which is actually in the last phase, the luteal phase. When the hormones have tanked, they've dropped. So both progesterone and estrogen drop in the second phase.
Yeah.
And it's then that women tend to have the symptoms. And we'll talk about that in a second because there's lots of things that women can do to help balance their hormones naturally so that they can race really well if a race happens to be planned for during their period. You know, energy support and just dampening down if they're getting cramping, if they get sore boobs. There's all kinds of things that you can do to help. Because ultimately, if a woman is hormonally balanced, her period will come and go and she does not even have symptoms, which is the ultimate. Mm. Yeah. But in our stressed, busy world, we're exposed to a whole range of things in our world and where stress is also a major trigger. So it's all about balance and it's all about dancing with our cycles and understanding our cycles and allowing that gentle recovery period, ideally during that early stage follicular, end of luteal phase, so that we've got the energy and the vitality to really roar mid-cycle, because that is our peak. That is when we are really at our best, our strongest.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So We do find that, you know, the time to really push in sessions is just around ovulation, pre-ovulation, as we're surging. It's not to say that you have to sit on the couch the rest of the month. But just so women are aware, you know, sometimes, and especially if they track their cycle, and I would really encourage women to use apps to track their cycle that can tell you so much. Things like Clue or Period Tracker. They're free.
And I use iPeriod.
iPeriod, yeah, that's another great one.
Yep.
And it just really helps you to understand your body.
So in terms of that, when you're really strong, it's approaching that day 14 of the cycle, sort of.
Some women will be a bit before. That late follicular.
Yep.
It could be a week or so.
Yeah.
So it will change a little bit for every woman.
Yeah.
But just, it'd be interesting if women just start to track that and go, I'm seeing a pattern here. This is really cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to have the conversation with my coach about seeing whether we can do some training in line with my regular cycle, if she has a regular cycle, to try and maximize some of these. Just play around with it. See what's possible.
Yeah. And then once you unlock that, it will be hard to believe that there was ever a time when you weren't training relative to your cycle.
I know.
Because, you know, it's just such a different, I don't know, it's a different capacity.
Yeah, it's more about going with the rhythm and the flow, not getting rigid and say, oh, it's day 14, I've got to do an X session.
Yeah.
It's more about just going with the flow. And when you have more energy, use it, like capture it. That's PB time. That's breakthrough time.
Yeah.
And when you need to nurture and rest, go with that too. Don't
adjust your expectations.
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel great today. Well, I know exactly why I don't feel great.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. So we haven't gone through what happens in that second half of the phase.
Yeah,
so
please.
From a performance perspective. So, I've got to put a caveat around this in that the body of research is really evolving around women in sport and how our hormones affect our performance. And I've got to say there is a lot of conflicting evidence out there, and I think we're moving towards more of a consensus in the research, but at the studies that have been done are still fairly small numbers. And the problem that we've had, or the issue I think the researchers have been faced with, is that women cycle at different times, so running a research study is a nightmare for them. And if they put everyone on the pill, they're actually just testing the pill. They're not testing women's hormones.
Of course.
Because it's two very different things. So now we're starting to do more research for women in other ways. It can't be a formulated, structured study like they may do for a male.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the evidence is evolving, which is great. It means great things for us in the next 5 to 10 years. We will have a lot better body of evidence. But the things that are starting to come out are things like we're more injury prone post ovulation, like with ACL tendons become more lax, for example. There was one meta-analysis that was published, now it's a while ago and so things are moving, but there was one meta-analysis that was really looking at the laxity of the knee in women during their menstrual cycles. And they found that laxity and the increased risk of injuries with the knees happened just post-ovulation in that luteal phase.
Mm.
Yeah, which I think now researchers are starting to look at women in sport, the soccer players, the netballers, the footballers, and going, actually, this is a real thing. We need to kind of manage this a little bit better, which is great.
Yeah, like, so good.
It's
we just
really
need to
good.
Better understand it.
Yeah.
And have
that. Yeah. And the effects of what estrogen and progesterone do, because that second phase of the cycle, which I guess is a little bit like autumn, after we've ovulated, which is summer, our hormones, estrogen kicks up again to trigger then progesterone coming up again. And so we see this shift in fluid balance because estrogen is also involved in that side of things in our bodies. And so we can feel more bloated, for example. We feel more like we're retaining more fluid in our bodies. And different women will experience this in different parts of their body. Some women get breast enlargement. Some women I know go up a size. Others get, fluid in their feet. It will vary for every woman. Exercise can feel harder at that point in our cycle, even though we're pushing just as, we're putting in as much effort. And our carbohydrates and glycogen stores aren't quite accessible. So we do need to have a bit more carbs at that time. And we also, you know this, most women know this, we start to crave carbs right before our period. Yeah. You know, bring me the chocolate now. Exactly. You know, that can be to do with magnesium, that we need a bit more magnesium around there for relaxation. Yeah. But it can also be we actually do need more carbs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've just got to be a bit more aware of.
And what is actually happening? So the body has, you've ovulated, the body's effectively preparing for a potential pregnancy,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes. So that's why it's doing that. Let's get ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the lining of the uterus is thickening, preparing for a possible embryo.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the carb cravings are real. Well, of course they're real.
They are real. You know, but
we now understand why. The body is craving glycogen.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, some women go savoury, some women go sweet, or some women go both and the perfect donut, you know? Yeah, like,
yeah. Self-apparel.
Yeah, but we've just got to remember that that is really, as you perfectly put it, so if that is really just in case there's a pregnancy, and our ability to actually do more fat burning occurs then.
Mm.
Yeah, so instead of relying on the carbs.
That's so a neat summary. That's good.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I might move on and ask you about some key symptoms that would suggest that perhaps we are not balanced hormonally. So
yeah.
we now understand sort of a very average, typical 28-day cycle.
Cycle, yeah.
And how it starts, the phases that it moves through, and then how we come full circle and come back to the bleeding phase. But if a woman was not balanced hormonally, what are some symptoms that she might experience?
So I think it depends on whether they're high or low with estrogen, for example, or very low progesterone. It's very rare to get high progesterone, so we'll kind of leave that one to the side.
Yeah.
But typically the common symptoms are things like tender breasts, for example. Heavy periods is usually estrogen dominance, we know that. But tender periods can be either higher estrogen or it can be an imbalance between progesterone and estrogen. Yeah. Not that either of them are too high, it's just the ratio between the two is a little bit out.
Yeah.
Certainly things like fibroids or endometriosis are very much orientated towards estrogen excess. And that can be an issue more with a woman clearing her estrogen, or she can just produce a little bit too much as well. Mid-cycle pain is another one, like the ovulation pain. It's common and it's normal for women to feel a little flicker, but when women are double over and they're really in a lot of excruciating pain, that's the signal that there's estrogen excess as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And period pain, again, like cramping, really bad period pain, can be a sign that we're not in balance as well. Very much so. That can also be low progesterone, the heavy cramping. Clots can be another sign, like big clots, because the uterine lining should come away fairly easily, not in big chunks, so to speak. Yeah.
What causes this hormonal imbalance?
Oh, a whole range of things.
Diet, lifestyle.
It can be inflammation, most definitely. Yeah. Stress is a big one for women, because the signaling will change from our brains when we're stressed. Remember how I spoke about the cortisol hogger from progesterone? So that will cause the reduced progesterone. But also things like xenoestrogens or chemicals and heavy metals in our environment that we're not even aware of. You know, skincare products that have got a lot of chemicals in them, they will sit in our hormone receptors and they will mimic hormones, but they won't do the activity of our hormones. Yeah, so we're kind of in this environment where our hormones really get affected, because remember, they're the first things that get shut down, as a matter of priority for our bodies. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Any other key symptoms? That's a neat summary.
And I think we've got to also give some respect to the later phase of some of our athletes that are in their 40s premenopausal phase that can last for 10 years, where estrogen is naturally declining. And those symptoms are typically, you know, the hot flushes may start, the dryness of the skin may start, heart palpitations may start, insomnia, increased stress, so their ability to tolerate stress will be declined. Again, because of that was the role of estrogen in protecting the brain and the neurotransmitters. And estrogen impacts on things like dopamine, our happy hormone. Mm. It impacts on GABA, which is an inhibitor of our rev, so keeping us calm. So this, you know, it just impacts us in so many different ways. Yeah.
In that pre-menopause phase, are women still getting their period?
Yeah, most are. Yeah. But, you know, you're typically not medically in menopause until 12 months after your last period.
Okay.
But that phase of changing can last up to 10 years before that happens.
Yeah.
So cycles can come and go,
right.
You know, irregular. They can lengthen, they can shorten, they can get heavier. Yeah, they change around.
It's all part of that transition phase.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Okay, now we have a sort of a good understanding of a normal, natural, healthy cycle and what our body is supposed to do and, you know, for a lot of us what it is doing. It'd be lovely to get your a little bit more insight and a better understanding of the oral contraceptive pill and contraception in general, because lots of women use the oral contraceptive pill or the Mirena, and it'd be nice to hear from you what some of the pros and cons for runners that are on these contraceptions are. Maybe start with a little bit of a briefing in terms of what they are.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess it's important for women. This is a really personal choice that women have, and it's great that we have that available to us. But I think it's important for women to own all of their health, and their hormonal health is extremely important for everything. So I guess when I talk about this, I'm not anti any kind of oral, any kind of pill or contraception. I'd like, you know, women to just have a balanced understanding of what it is doing in their bodies, because there's certainly some women who benefit greatly from taking the pill in terms of balancing their hormones and managing their symptoms. But I think a lot of women don't fully understand the darker side, I guess, of contraceptive and long-term use. And there's many different forms of contraception. So some women do well on the mini pill, which is just a progesterone form, while others need more of a combined estrogen-related and progesterone pill. And others do well on, as you touched on, things like the Mirena, which is an IUD form, or the copper IUD. Others choose to have Implanon, which is, you know, inserted, or a patch. So there's so many different options that are now available, which is great. But I think overall, women need to really understand that when they're taking pharmaceutical medication for hormone management, it is not like our own hormones. Very, very different. They're all synthetic, and they fit into our hormone receptors, whether that be estrogen or progesterone, in a clunky way. It's a bit like putting the square post in a round hole. There are gaps. You know, it doesn't quite fit. And because of it not quite fitting, a lot of women have other symptoms because of the pill. Yeah. But some women don't have that.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's good. But ideally, it's either blocking ovulation, or it's making implantation very difficult. That's what they're all designed to do. Yeah. But what we need to be very clear on is that women, if they're on the pill, they're not ovulating, they're not getting that hormone dance that we talked about before. They're flatlining.
Yeah.
They are put to sleep. Yeah. Hormonally, I'm talking.
Yeah.
So you won't be getting all those beautiful extra effects, so to speak. The receptor is being blocked partially. So you'll get some of the effects, but you won't get all of them. For example, progesterone. Progesterone is in like the mini pill, as I mentioned before, like Norrmalm. It is primarily designed to prevent implantation. Progesterone is all about increasing implantation opportunity, thickening the uterus. So, you know, they have very different effects on the body.
And just so people fully understand, by implantation, Kate means an embryo.
An embryo, sorry.
A fertilized egg.
Sorry.
Yeah. So yes. After ovulation, when the egg has been released, it's been fertilized by the sperm. Implantation meaning the actual little embryo, just in case anyone was...
Yeah.
That's after sexual intercourse.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think women will be drawn, obviously, many women are drawn to contraceptive medications because obviously it's an effective way of controlling, used as a contraceptive, highly effective, up to 99.5% in many cases if they're used properly, yeah, depending on the type that you choose. Most of them are really easy to use.
Yep.
Some of them you don't even have to remember. You just got to remember to get them changed, like the IUD, for example. You don't have to take them daily, like the pill, for example. And for many women, it can manage symptoms, you know, period pain and acne, irregular bleeding. A bleeding when you're on the pill is not a bleed.
No.
It's not a bleed.
Yeah.
It's very different.
That's not your period.
That's not your period. It's very different.
It's basically a withdrawal bleed, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, that's all it is. And if someone is a very heavy bleeder, it can reduce their risk of anemia if that is their primary issue.
Mm.
Yeah, there may be other issues, but it can do that, which is great. And it can make your periods more regular. Yeah, so you can plan. You can avoid a period for a certain period of time, whatever it is, around certain events or whatever. I find that
so confusing because it's like it's... can make your period more regular, but it's not your period.
Yeah, no, so it's
like,
fake.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like, sorry, it's control really. The bleed time. Yeah, we should just call it that. Yeah. And yeah. That's a better way to put it. It can lighten the period for some women as well. It doesn't stop it, but it will lighten it. So, it has value.
Women need to be informed because I think a lot of women start taking contraception to prevent pregnancy based on the understanding that they don't want to ovulate. But ovulation is critical for health and overall health and well-being.
And that hormonal dance,
So it's a case of, do you really want to shut off ovulation at the expense of losing so many of the benefits? Isn't it true that over 50 hormones are released at the time of ovulation?
Oh my goodness, I haven't heard of that statistic.
I definitely have heard that.
Wow.
And it's such a critical thing for overall health and well-being that we're really just, we're shutting something off when we could actually be, you know, enjoying the benefits, the overall health benefits of ovulation and preventing pregnancy some other way.
Yeah, there are lots of options out there for women in terms of contraceptive, in terms of natural methods and partners understanding a woman's body.
Absolutely.
You know, because there is only that fertile window.
Yeah, of course.
You can't fall pregnant late luteal.
No egg.
Can't happen. So there is lots of options from that perspective. And I think you mentioned an analogy that you talked about before.
Yeah, I did definitely read this. I'm absolutely 100% sure of it. And it was the idea that a woman doesn't need to ovulate unless she is planning a pregnancy is consistent with the idea that a man does not need testosterone unless he's planning to have children. So if there was a man on the street who's not about to have children or not interested in or not planning a family, of course he would understand that he needs testosterone for many, many and varied things in his life. Mm. Men know they need testosterone and they absolutely do need testosterone. They don't just need testosterone if they're planning on having a family. And it's exactly the same for women. Women need to ovulate for all of the hormonal benefits that extend well beyond just having a baby.
Yeah.
But we just think of ovulation as the release of an egg if we're planning on having a child. And if we're not about to have a child, don't need it. Cut. It's out. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And I think that's a little bit, it certainly was my understanding of contraception pharmaceutical contraception before I fully understood the complete menstrual cycle.
Yeah, cool. Mm. Yeah, that's a great analogy. Yeah, so I think a lot of women aren't quite aware that they get stuck into the pattern and it's just easy. It becomes easy for them to take contraception, medicated contraception. And, so they just stay on it for years and years and years often without kind of really considering the longer term issues. And some women will get side effects. You know, some women will get weight gain. They will get depression. They may get hair growth, acne, some get nausea, headaches.
DVT.
Yeah. There's a whole more sinister things, with heart issues and atherosclerotic buildup, thromboembolism, as you mentioned, and blood clots is increased with oral contraceptive pill. There are also some studies coming out that suggest that there's an increased risk of cancer and liver tumours. So, and some will have reproductive issues later on, like early menopause and reduced fertility later on as well. For some women, that affects them that way, and it can take a longer time for them to fall pregnant when they are ready. They may need a good several years off the pill before they can establish their own cycle properly. But the things that women don't commonly know about is that synthetic hormones will affect their microbiome in their gut and their vaginal microbiome. Because the two talk together as well, those two microbiomes. And that can occur, that change in composition in those two microbiomes can change after just 6 months on the medication. So women can then develop more bacterial vaginosis and other infections like candida that present as thrush for sexually active women. That shows definitely an increase, but also things like leaky gut. So women will find they're more intolerant to certain foods, for example, or have reactions after certain foods, may get bloating or other gut symptoms as well. And that's all because of the effect that it's actually having on the microbiome and the way that it's then breaking down food. But then there are other things, because our liver takes a greater load because it's metabolizing the hormone and trying to excrete it from our body. So we just have to be mindful that the poor old liver, it's got to metabolize and get rid of everything in our environment, and it's just loading it a little bit more with just another drug. For athletes, I think it's really important that we keep in mind about the vital nutrients that we need for energy and for all the other processes in our body that get the excretion of those nutrients is enhanced when we're on medication, contraceptive medication. Things like it reduces our levels of zinc, of selenium, of vitamin E, of CoQ10, which is a key cofactor in part of our energy production system. It reduces B12 and some of our other B vitamins. Again, that fits into our energy cycle in our citric acid cycle. That produces our ATP. So that they're all cofactors to help that system work.
And these are all critical.
These are all critical for us. And things like magnesium, it can, you know, increase our ability to excrete our magnesium. But then there are other accumulators. For example, I see this really commonly in clinical practice when I have women coming in, that I do a mineral analysis on them to see, okay, what's the balance of your minerals? And their copper, when they're on the oral contraceptive pill, can be very high. When copper is high, it will interact with zinc and iron. So they can then develop anemia because their copper is so high, because they've been on the pill for a long time. It's fascinating how it all kind of interrelates, but you know, it's not just hearsay. I see this physically on a regular basis.
It's a daily tablet.
But ironically, it's not just copper, it's cadmium, it's some of the other heavy metals as well that get stored. But the other thing, although for some women here's the oxymoron part with iron. It can inhibit the absorption, but for some women they will store it more. So you can actually get iron overload. So again, that can cause toxicity and like oxidative damage in some women. It's not always the case, but and we're talking long-term use here as well. And the key thing that it depletes is our major antioxidant, which is called glutathione, and our liver makes that, and that can change that our ability to make the full throttle of that. It will still make some. But that's just so important in counteracting the free radicals that our bodies deal with on a daily basis for living life, you know. Yeah, so it has quite I guess, broad range effects on our bodies. There's, yeah, just, you know, I could go into so much detail on the, you know, on the darker side of contraceptive, but there's also other things that we just don't think about. Like, there's the environmental load of estrogens, synthetic estrogens. And there was one study I read recently where over 700 kilograms per year of synthetic estrogens derived from oral contraceptives were pumped into the environment. So that then affects our waterways and our fish and all our equine, you know, yeah.
Don't think of those effects, do we?
I know, we just don't think about it. And we don't think about safe disposal. We don't think about the fact that we metabolize some of our, well, most of our estrogen, but we're excreting it as well. Yes. And that's going into our waterways as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, women absolutely have choices, but we can also do a lot of things to help women. If it's just for contraceptive, there is great educators out there who can educate couples and women if they're on their own in terms of planning and understanding your body better. There's things that women can do if they're finding a pill is not working for them. There are lots of other options that they could try as well. So I'm not against some women having it, but I think women need to be aware that if they're being depleted nutritionally or otherwise, that they need to take action on that. They need to be very mindful in their diet of getting additional sources of those kind of nutrients that we really need. And if women decide to come off the pill, that they have a mature conversation with their partner, if they're partnered, about how they're going to agree to manage the contraceptive side of things, but also working really hard to balance the hormones again afterwards is so important. Looking after the liver to help metabolize the leftover and to get the liver functioning again properly. And, you know, basic things like having lots of foods from the brassica family, the cruciferous family, some may know it, which is our cabbage, our Brussels sprouts, our broccoli, our collie, our kale. They're all from a family that our liver loves for detoxification, especially for estrogen detoxification, and the sulfurs. So the sulfurs are like your onions and your garlics, for example. They're great, and we can we should have them daily in our diet. Daily in our diet. I'm getting tongue-tied. To help with, you know, to help with our hormonal balance.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Kate, if someone's listening and they're thinking, okay, I'm dialed in, I'm really motivated to embrace my cycle and ensure that my cycle is occurring naturally and in its most natural form. However, they're a little struggling with, and I probably fit into this category, I have a normal healthy, my cycle's 30 to 31 day cycle, but I follow my app and really try and embrace each stage and know exactly where I'm at and know that it's occurring, and it's my I think of it as like a monthly check-in that my body is everything's ticking along like it's a
absolutely because that's great.
If that's the first thing to go, well, the next thing's absolutely a bone stress injury or an overuse injury.
You're absolutely spot on there, you know. And I think it can absolutely, and I think this is such an important conversation that athletes need to have with their coaches as well, because it can be the first sign of overtraining as well before that stress fracture kicks in. Yeah. It's like a real red flag. Yeah. Whoa, all is not balanced here.
So if you are dialed in but wanting to manage some of your symptoms to reduce some of the symptoms that occur in that just that premenstrual phase.
Yeah.
Talk to us about symptom management.
Oh gosh, there's so many things that can be done. There's lots of herbal things that really help. Ironically, there's one called cramp bark that I use a lot that literally help with cramping. But if typically women do experience cramping and discomfort for the day or two before their cycle, there's lots of simple things like magnesium, for example. Having magnesium is great. It will reduce the intensity of the cramping. Some women's cramps completely go with taking a magnesium supplement. The inflammation that can be driven around that time, and hence one of the compounds that's released at higher amounts around that time, just before our period, is prostaglandins, and they're pro-inflammatory, and that's why some of our tissue can be more sensitive. We're more sensitive to pain around then, so our breasts will feel more tender, for example. And there are lots of things to dampen down that inflammation, things like fish oil and turmeric and all the great anti-inflammatory foods that we can have in our diet, making sure we're having plenty of essential fatty acids from a range of plant and fish, for example, if we eat fish. And there's things that we would ideally avoid leading up to that period. You know, there's common things that really inflame us during that time. Things like sugar, processed fats, especially vegetable processed hydrolyzed oils that are in things like margarine. Right. It's nasty. If you saw the way it was manufactured, you wouldn't eat it.
Dairy?
Dairy is another one. Dairy, this is in high amounts, small amounts of yogurt, great, go for it. But when you're having a lot, wheat's another really pro-inflammatory one. With the breast tenderness especially, women can find coffee can aggravate that. It's fascinating. And if women are getting lumpy breasts, like they get almost little lumps, but they come and go, so it's not like it's something really nasty, they literally just come and go. That can often be what we call fibrotic breasts. And that should always be checked out. You should always go for a scan. But sometimes it's just a matter of you need more iodine.
Interesting.
Iodine can resolve it completely, very quickly. But again, that's something that needs to be guided by a practitioner, because it can become quite toxic if you have too much of it. Yeah. So it's everything you've got to, you know. But there's simple things, you know, like ginger.
Yeah.
Ginger's great and anti-inflammatory. Mm. And I find even making a ginger compress that you use topically is lovely. Some women like the magnesium creams. Some women really thrive on, especially because we're going into a winter phase, warm baths with beautiful magnesium salts and relaxing oils can just take the ease off it. Exercise is good.
Yep.
Like movement is good to help release. But strenuous, maybe not so much.
So I'd encourage runners to do what you feel you need, you know.
Don't
just put the program to the side for
really
a few days.
Listen.
And if it's a hilly long run and you don't feel like it, well, you know why you don't feel like it.
Yeah.
Have a walk and go to a yoga class.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Like, take care of yourself.
Yep, yeah.
I think is the most important thing. Because how will you fire in that firing stage of the cycle if you haven't looked after yourself in the nurturing stage?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then there's all those other things like what we touched on just before, looking after your gut health. Absolutely. You know, other nutrients that you need at that time, like B6 is a great one as well that can help relieve PMS type symptoms. Making sure you're having plenty of quality protein, because the glycine and methionine, which are amino acids found in protein, will help with the detoxification of the estrogen through our liver as well.
And real protein, not from powder.
Yeah, real foods is ideal.
Yeah.
Ideal, yeah.
Kate, I think on your website you've got a helpful meal planner or...
Yes, yeah. It's called the Female Hormone Balancing Meal Plan, and it's just a week, and it just gives women an example of how they may bring in some of these foods into their daily life. And so that's free. You can just jump onto my website and download it under the freebies. It's literally the banner called freebies section, and women can access that off my website.
So that's www.athletesanctuary.com.au. And we might try and link to that in our show notes as well.
Yeah, great.
But athletesanctuary.com.au, go to the freebie section, and Kate's put together an example of a really helpful weekly meal plan.
And I've written a couple of blogs on this as well. So under the, when you look at the freebie section, there's a resources tab right down the bottom. And there's a whole bunch of other examples of how to overcome period pain as well. There's a lot of options there for women to consider.
Yeah.
So if they've tried a few that we've mentioned that hasn't quite cut it, they can try some others. Like there's a lot out there.
Yeah. That's probably a really nice place to wrap up our discussion on hormones, unless there's anything you want to add that we may not have got to. it's obviously a very complex topic. We probably only feel like we've scratched the surface, but
yeah,
I think that's been a good deep dive.
Yeah, great.
And I think if we park that there for a little moment, the one other thing I wanted to grab your knowledge and brain and wisdom on is, in light of everything going on in Australia at the moment with the bushfires, many of our Inside Running podcast community living in areas that are severely affected by smoke at the moment, we think about, and this is where it does get really scary, because as selfish as it sounds, it's our day-to-day lives that are really affected, and we feel for the farmers and we feel for people who have lost so much. But when we know our day-to-day lives are affected because we just want to get out for a run, that's when we know that, you know, this is something really serious. And it got me thinking about respiratory health and the effects of training in environments that are, I guess, you know, really affected, and there is thick and heavy smoke.
Yeah.
Can you just give us a really quick couple of minutes of your thoughts, just to help guide people who are looking out the window and can't see far, concerned or worried or curious about the smoke and how it affects your training and respiratory health?
So we know smoke is very toxic for our lungs, you know, very toxic. So without going into too much technical detail of how it affects the lungs, too much exposure, it's also a carcinogenic, but we just have to be mindful that it's going to inhibit our breathing. Mm-hmm. And you've got to really weigh up the risks involved. You know, one run that you may have to skip could save your life. So first and foremost, consider your safety before your program.
Yes.
But there are good options to minimize your exposure to smoke. Things like training inside on a treadmill, although some people may not like it, it's a good option when there's a lot of smoke around. Avoiding bushland. Just avoiding it if you're in an area that's affected by fire. Don't even risk it. It's just not worth it. You will never outrun a fire. Never. No one will. So don't even try. But also asthmatics need to be particularly careful. Although asthma is triggered a lot of the time by pollens and things, there can be other things that can cause patients to feel more raspy and to restrict their breathing. So it's really important that those that have asthmatic conditions take their preventers and take their medications at this time as well. And overall lung health, it's about minimizing your exposure. It really is. So this time will pass. We know this time will pass, but we're very early in the season. So we do have to just consider a plan in terms of just think ahead. Okay, if next week's possibly the fires are going to be ahead, I'm going to have to make that extra effort to get to an environment that, you know, maybe I can safer, you know, maybe that's running in town rather than out of town. Maybe that is going into the gym and just being a little bit more organized. It's not about not training. It's just about choosing your smart areas and environments to train and modifying it accordingly, you know.
And even thinking like, if you absolutely loathe the treadmill, it's okay, go to the swimming pool.
Yeah.
And jump in the pool. Get in
if
the
it's
water.
An indoor.
Indoor pool, sorry.
Yeah.
I meant that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess it's a time to be a little bit creative by putting safety first. Ben St. Lawrence was on the podcast with the guys just a few days ago, and, you know, everyone knows the caliber of Ben St. Lawrence, and he's got a place up at the Blue Mountains, and he's making changes and jumping on the treadmill and this and that and not risking it. So
yeah, good.
I think we could take some wisdom out of Ben's
absolutely
daily practice and Kate's wisdom, and just safety first. And, you know, if it means grabbing a mate and driving to the gym together and just getting on neighboring treadmills.
Still going for a run together. Make it fun.
And then, yeah.
Yeah,
but
make
just
it fun.
Think outside the box, friends, because, it's not worth the serious implications of breathing in heavy smoke, I guess.
Yeah, or being caught. So.
Yeah, or being caught, sorry.
Yeah,
Absolutely. Kate, that's a nice place to wrap up, I think. I think we've covered a bit today. Again, if anyone wants to learn a little bit more, Kate's website is a great place to start, and that is athletesanctuary.com.au. And Kate is also on Instagram. Is it Kate Smythe?
sports naturopath.
Kate Smyth, sports naturopath, but I'm sure there'll be links and tags to that. Thank you again for your time.
You're very welcome.
And all your wisdom. And I'm sure we'll hook in again with you soon.
Great.
Take care.
Bye.